Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. And do we have a treat for you? Today, we had on the show David Lee, who is the founder of Xinchijian, of Hacked Matter, of just Maker Collide, of the Shenzhen Innovation Labs. He's been in technology since graduating Taiwan since 95. He's been involved with heavily into connected devices, into hardware. And at the beginning of the show, we wanted to cover a lot of different subjects. But as he got talking, it just turned into so much gold that we really had to break it into two. So this is actually going to be part one of a two-part series speaking to David Lee. And what we talked about in this first episode was, you know, we got into what is Shenzhen. Is Shenzhen, you know, and to what a lot of you might not know is it seems like it's just a copy. It's a copycat movement, but it is so much more, and it is so much faster and so much leaner, and it's so much more individual than anybody actually realizes here. And it is way beyond copying. It is not even close to what copying is. And David just has some amazing stories talking about exactly when the maker movement started, how it got started, where it's at now, where the future of it is, and then really getting into just how basically why Nokia and Motorola died, and a lot of people attribute that to the rise of Apple. Well, David doesn't agree. He actually really believes that it was the Shenzhen, you know, feature phone development in the Guangdong region down by Shenzhen and Guangzhou that really actually contributed. They ate up 25% of the market share of phones back in the early 2000s, and that is what really led the way. I think Apple, and as David says, Apple was more the beneficiary of the Shenzhen movement here in China for taking over the smartphone, ended up taking over the smartphone marketplace in the world. So today, it is just me, Todd Embley, your host, because Ryan Shukin, my co-host, my brother-in-arms during the China Startup Pulse, could not be here. He is over in Taipei this week as we're launching, China Accelerator is launching the MOX, the mobile-only accelerator over in Taipei now. So he unfortunately couldn't be with me today. So it is just me, but David does most of the talking, and it is all gold. I hope you enjoy. Hi, everybody. And as we mentioned, we are here with David Lee, and I'm going to give a bit of a background on David just to give you an idea of everything that he's been into here in China since we started. So over the past 20 years, David has started several open source software projects and contributed to many others. In 2010, he co-founded Xinchijian, the first hackerspace in China to promote hacker and maker culture and open source hardware. He also co-founded Hacked Matter in 2011, an open innovation think tank focusing on the maker movement and the China ecosystem, especially Shenzhen. In the past 2 years, he has become interested in urban farming and is an enthusiastic proponent of aquaponics, which brings the spirit of open source to farming and gardening. In 2014, he co-founded Maker Collider in collaboration with Intel to help makers turning ideas and prototypes into products, as well as the Shenzhen Open Innovation Lab supported by the Shenzhen government. All right. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Todd.
Okay, so I think we're going to start with the earlier days. You know, you were the first founder, of a hackerspace, of a makerspace in China. Now, and there was nothing here. How did you get involved? I mean, even the early days, how were you interested in maker stuff in China?
I think the maker movement in the past 10 years, it's pretty much be part of this global movement, mm-hmm. in terms of the open source hardware, mm-hmm. comes to age. So now we used to have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars, mm. buying a development board, buying to do our own putting the new gadget together,
figuring out manufacturing and
And but in the past 10 years, the development board has been dropping to $10-$20, mm-hmm. So it's becoming possible to play around with it as a hobby.
Yeah.
With that, was also the added of the digital manufacturers, which including 3D printer, mm-hmm. Laser cutter. Now we can just download files off the net and, mm-hmm. have the machine do the the real work. Mm-hmm. So that background is really pushing the maker movements in terms of people starting to build wacky stuff, interesting stuff, fun stuff, put it online, and you take a look at that, you're like, okay, well, I can buy this and it's going to cost me $50 and I can spend a weekend put this together. Mm-hmm. It's something not available on the market. Something is just goofy and fun. So around probably 2008, probably the end of 2008, a bunch of friends, we all hang out in this co-working space called Xindangwei. Mm-hmm. Then we're starting to play around with that. Okay, well, what's the fun stuff to do? And we found this whole Arduino maker stuff online.
Yeah.
And we're starting to get into it, getting the board, buying 3D printers, building drone, building robots. Mm-hmm. Eventually, everything gets piled up at home. And well, the wife wasn't too happy.
Yeah.
So kind of having to find a space to hide all this.
Yeah.
So that's how really at that stage, the idea of Xinchejian really came about around 2009. We started to host event in Xindangwei to talk about maker movements, to talk about open source hardware, to talk about all these nice, interesting digital fabrications. And eventually, when Xindangwei moved to a new location, we started in Xinchejian, which was actually initially, it's about 15, 20 square meters. Not much bigger than the recording booth we are in right now. And eventually, we are moving to the current locations.
Yeah. And so you guys, Xinchejian is actually here inside the People Square Hero Center, where China Accelerator is. And you guys are on the other end of the building. And then, so it's an interesting setup here because there's the Xinchejian, you know, garage. And then connected to that is the workshop, all the tools, the CNC machines, the laser cutter, the board oven, everything is there. And then you kind of co-maintain that area with Xinfab, which has a door on the other side of the workshop that goes into their lab, which is the 3D printing kind of community co-working space, membership club, you know, thing.
Yep. Yeah. When we move to the new locations, that's the Xinchejian, and also one of our members, Lucio, who are very into this Fab Lab, starting by MIT.
Yeah.
So he's starting SimFab, and we are just adjacent to each other. Still share a lot of the tours, and the space. Mm-hmm. And it the community in Shanghai has really grown in the past. Well, it's 5 years. This is the 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit. And I mean, I thought it was interesting what you said in the beginning, because of something I wanted to allude to now was about how your wife was getting maybe a little fed up with all the junk. Okay. But I think this is a real problem. And it's why Xinchejian is just so valuable here, potentially more than in the West, especially in North America, where, you know, we grew up having a garage typically. And in China, we're so cramped for space, you know, and most people live in very tight quarters and storage is at a premium. And so if you want to be a hacker, it's not like you could be, you know, Steve Jobs and Wozniak in a garage working on things and just have all your tools and junk and stuff, you know, lying around. You don't have that kind of space in China. So a community and a club like this, where there's a space, there's knowledge, there's meetups, there's interest and energy, you know, there's talks, you know, there's expos and demonstrations, and then of course place where you can store all your tools and all your bits and bobs and your ovens and your bolts and your nuts and your boards. I mean, everything is there. It's so valuable for them to have that place where they can go and play with all the necessary things they need to further their hobby, you know, interests.
In the past 5 years, we have seen a lot of interesting people popping up, interested in building their own robots, building their own 3D printers. And that has been a very interesting growth for for us.
Yeah. And I mean, I've also noticed that each place Shinchijen has been, there's also quite a bit of aquaponics going on. And we say that, you know, when Cyril, founder of China Accelerator, we you know, we go around on the Geeks on a Train, come down from Dalian, we'd always, and you always had these things. And then I know, like, William Baobin, managing director, he actually has this, one of these in his house where he's really kind of collecting, you know, the fish poop and funneling that up on top and then fertilizing, you know, his plants using this.
So I think a lot of part of this maker movements is really about going back to the basic, going back to creating stuff. And it's not just Shinchijen. You go around in a lot of the maker space around the world, you see people play around with aquaponic, hydroponic. These are used to be very expensive equipment. But now we have the internet, we have the tool, we have... Now we can actually build this on the cheap.
Yeah.
And fool around with the ideas of the how this works. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people get into aquaponics because it's actually a very interesting subject because it's a cross between agricultures and the agriculture and the aquacultures.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something either subject will pursue. And it's actually led to a huge online community and the makerspace to take a look at this and how try to improve it. So in terms of the same as the maker movement, it's the phenomena of people certainly getting empowered by all this information online, all this, the having the space, having the access to the tool to build it. People can test in out new ideas and this whole sharing online is kick the whole movement into an exponential growth.
Mm-hmm. We were last year, almost coming up on a year ago, we were going to do a panel together. I was actually going to moderate a panel at the LIFT conference in Geneva around the maker movement in China. But just before that happened, the government, it might even be the Minister of Technology or somebody quite have quite high up, did some pretty well-known tours, as we well-known now, and visited some of these hacker spaces, maker spaces, co-working spaces. They went to a few places. They came through Shanghai, went through Hero Center here, I think. They also went down to Shenzhen, made a big deal down there. And then it kind of went live. It went on public, you know, China CCTV news. And you actually weren't able to go at the last minute because it created such a buzz that kind of kicked off some meetings. A lot of people, you know, jumped into action, and they asked you to stick around so that you could advise. I think so. I'm curious about the level of support, you know, from the government, because I think you help them. You're a source of information and advice, or an advisor almost in a lot of this regards. How involved at the government level? I mean, how high up does the interest in supporting this whole movement in China, how high does it go, and how much interest is there?
It really surprised all of us. It's really in the January 4th,
yep.
In 2015, mm-hmm. The Prime Minister Li Keqiang make a surprise visit to the Taihua Makerspace in Shenzhen. and that just basically blew up everything. And
it's, it really did.
It's a whole crazy movement. I think along with that, so this year's probably in the beginning of the 2015,
mm-hmm.
We're starting to get a lot of requests, high-level official visit. So I think for the 2015, we received the Minister of Technology, Wang Gang, and Chen Demin, who's actually in charge of the cross stride between the China-Taiwan relationship. And we also get the Secretary General of Shanghai, mm-hmm. Han Zhen, came in and visit. There are a lot of interest, but it's also kind of exploratory.
Mm-hmm.
They are trying to figure out what this maker movement is, what it looks like, what it feels like. But it's interesting part about receiving all these Chinese officials, as the as people knows, most of Chinese officials actually have the engineering background.
Yeah.
So everyone will come in and look at the tours and starting to recall the crazy stuff they built in the old days. And it was a fun experience. And I think places like Shanghai, Shenzhen, Beijing, there are a lot of exposures. And along with this, and that's also the new policies. Right now is the official government doctrines in terms of the mass creativity, the mass entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been this really marking the China for 2015.
Yeah.
It's bootstrapping these movements along with the use having the makers as this poster boys.
Yeah.
For the for this kind of bottom up creativity and bottom up entrepreneurship.
What do you see for the future as far as like the hardware side?
So in 2011, we started the think tanks called Hack Matters.
Mm-hmm.
It's really looking at how this kind of bottom up innovations, bottom up creativity, and bottom up entrepreneurship. We set up the think tanks to think about this imported movements into China. But as we end up doing in the past couple years, we wrote a lot about the really grassroots bottom-up entrepreneurship in China.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been, and especially the Shenzhen, and that has always been big part of the Chinese cultures.
Yeah.
Cooperative work, very open sharing of everything. And so I think for 2016, it's more going to be a recognition of that system and more attractions of the makers to come to China to build smart hardware.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break and thank our sponsors. But when we come back, I want you to tell us, what is Shenzhen? Because this is huge. This is a massive word in China, and it's a really big deal. Back. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody. Todd here. Just want to jump in and thank our sponsors very, very much for the support that they give to us and having our backs in trying to get this podcast going. And so far, so good. I think everybody's given us some really great feedback and it's done well. And in no small part to the backing of China Accelerator, full transparency, I do work for China Accelerator. I am the program director. But everything that they have brought to the ecosystem that we have tried to bring to the ecosystem, I think has been very, very well received. And I think doing a lot to just promote and nurture the startup ecosystem, not just in Shanghai, but all around China and globally, as we get a lot of global companies coming through as well. And, it's just, if you want to enter China, as we talked about, we even mentioned it in the show today, if you are thinking about coming to China, I think understanding how difficult China can be and joining forces with China Accelerator to launch your product in China is just something that we find is incredibly valuable and think it's very, very important. Now, we also want to thank PeopleSquared. We are a tenant, so to speak. We live and operate out of PeopleSquared, the Hero Space, which is their flagship operation and space here in the middle of Shanghai, right in downtown Jing'an. They think they have 9 spaces throughout Shanghai. I think they have over a dozen throughout China, one in Shenzhen, up in Beijing. They are the premier co-working space of China right now. And their dedication to community. I was talking with Jenny on the way out the door about all the new players that have come into the ecosystem here. And Jenny said, we really got to hand it to the PeopleSquared people because they have their office in PeopleSquared. And she said that it's just their commitment to being so helpful to startups and just working for the startups is just yet to be matched by any other co-working space in China. So kudos to PeopleSquared, my friend Bob Jung, who's the founder. We've had him on the show before. So big thanks to China Accelerator and PeopleSquared for their sponsorship. Really appreciate it. Okay, everybody, welcome back. We're talking with David Lee, the founder of X, Y, and Z, everything to do with makers and aquaponics and eco-friendly and agriculture and farming and everything like that. He's just been one of the biggest influences in all kind of startup movements here in China, and we're really, really blessed to have him on board here. You mentioned before the break the word Shenzhen, okay? Just tell us, what is Shenzhen?
So Sendai really refers to this very bottom-up business ecosystem, mainly surrounded in the Shenzhen in Guangdong, in the south, in the southern China. Mm-hmm. It really started as the back in the early 2000s as the industry who makes copycat mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to believe, but it's hard to believe right now. But it's the back in 2000s. I mean, mobile phone is one of those things just getting starting to become popular.
Yeah,
but they are very expensive. I mean, a Nokia brick phone can cost, without a contract, can cost as much as $1,000.
Yeah.
But mobile phone is also one of those devices. Everybody wants one.
Yeah.
You don't have to convince people you need to buy a mobile phone. All they need to ask is how much. So, but company like Nokia, Motorola, the big company back then, they keep the price high. So this gives the big opportunities in the areas of making phone for the developing world.
Yeah.
So that's how Shenzhen come about. So in the early days, people starting to making counterfeit phone. Not really counterfeit, but they are more copycat. The reason be the internal of the phone, they are all legit.
Yeah.
They come from the legit chip distributors.
The manufacturing factories here in China that were making all those parts for the other phones anyway.
Yeah. And so, but they take the look of Nokia phone. They take the look of the Motorola. But slowly, they are building up really fast, and they are starting to having an impact on the overall mobile phone industry. Just to see how big that system is. By 2012, the Shenzhen ecosystem is producing about 300 million cell phones a year, and that's a quarter of the global cell phone shipment.
Wow.
And all of this, they goes to third, fourth tier cities in China, and they goes to rural area. But they also goes to Africa. They goes to South America. They goes to Middle East. They goes to Russia. They goes to
Southeast Asia. Yeah.
Southeast Asia. They go everywhere, and that becoming so. They have been quickly evolving, becoming not just copying. I mean, at some points, the big company they are copying from are producing phone too slow for them to copy.
Yeah.
So what the system eventually does is they're starting to copy each other. And instead of the fighting each other in court, a new business ecosystem emerged. That's what's called a gongban, which roughly translated into a public bowl. The idea is very similar to open source hardware today. But it's the production ready. So if I want to build a cell phone, I don't have to go out and hire a team of engineers to build a cell phone. I can just pick it up from the markets, say, okay, well, this is roughly the size I need, and they are already ready, production ready. And I can just put a case on it. And then along with that, that's another side of Shenzhen. It's called the Gongmo, which roughly translates into a public casing.
Okay.
So people are producing all kind of configuration of the circuit board and all kind of configuration of the case. People come in, you can just go walk into the market and say, okay, well, I like this board, I like this case, and a lot of them will magically fit together.
Sounds like Dell.
Yeah. But in the mass scale.
Yeah.
And then everybody is jumping into this market. So as we're starting the think tanks in 2011, we look into the maker movements, and we're starting to make a lot of field trips, the research trip to Shenzhen. And we're starting to talk to people working in that business. And it was crazy, crazy days. If you want to see a gold rush in China, that's Shenzhen.
Yeah, it's true. That's a good way of putting it.
Here, like all the crazy, interesting stories. So just put this in perspective. There's this 10,000 square meter mall in Shenzhen. And each one of the counter is about a meter long.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, the transfer fee, not the rent, not just if I own one and you want one, and that's a cost of transfer. that's $500,000 RMB to transfer a 1 square meter counters.
Wow. Holy cow.
Those guys are making so much money. At one point, people, because the mobile phone, the price of it actually fluctuated during the day. So just in order to capture the highest price, they rent out the hotel room next to this market called Hua Chang Bay. They rent out a hotel room as a warehouse. And it's just so lucrative.
Wow.
And yeah, we got, it's really true. I mean, if you see the picture back then, if you Google the pictures, you look at the people working at a 1 meter counters, climbing into the space, it's really small. And people look at it like, what a poor working conditions. But what they don't realize is the guys behind the counter has his Bentley parked downstairs in the parking lot.
Yeah.
So that's the gold rush day. And that built up the entire very interesting ecosystem of very open innovations, very agile manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
And that built up the mobile phone business. And that, along with that, so they slowly transitioned over from feature phone to smartphone. But as they started the transitions, they actually disrupted the feature phone business. So thinking about the downfall of Nokia and Motorola, they are not really causing by Apple with iPhone. They are really causing by this big ecosystem which took up a big chunk of the global markets and really stopped their growth. And the Apple is just the
beneficiary.
Yep.
They won out of
the last straw on the camel's back.
Yeah, that's right.
And so eventually they got into this smartphone and a lot of interesting brands just emerged out of this ecosystem. So right now, the number one smartphone in Africa is not Apple, it's not Samsung, it's this company called Chuanyin. It's a Chinese company, and they are now the number one mobile phone in Africa. And Africa being the fastest development regions. But very few attention is actually paying to what people use in Africa.
Yeah.
And the same Sanzai spirit, they build things for the local market. Build things for the local need.
Yeah.
So I was shown this cell phone. It's actually a 5-inch smartphone, but it's about twice as thick as iPhone.
Okay.
And it's entirely batteries. and you look at that, you're like, it's not an interesting looking phone, but it has the benefit of 7 days standby and 3-day usage.
Yeah.
And with all of us, with our very shining, thin iPhone, we all have a cord attaching to the power bank.
Yeah, our pocket.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know who looks silly now.
Yeah, that's right.
And
put those together, and they're actually bigger than the phone in Africa that lasts
true.
For 7 days.
Yep. And so that's one side. And out of this ecosystem, starting to emerge because everybody participate. Everybody can jump in there and say, okay, well, I want to build 50,000 cell phone for this very small niche markets.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go and do it in a very little efforts and very little, very quick development time. Once we interview someone who actually took a cell phone from a scratch on the back of napkins, all the way to rolling up the production line in 37 days.
Yes.
And well, he swear he's never going to do it again, but something he can brag about for the rest of his life.
That's crazy.
So that's that kind of crazy open ecosystem, which is attracting more and more people to China. And that's how, when the maker movement started, the global makers starting to come into Shenzhen. Not just because it's a base for manufacturers, but it's really about this open ecosystem where everybody can come and build. And I think the latest interesting story coming out of this ecosystem is the story of the hoverboard.
The hoverboard, yeah.
So it's the hardest Christmas items for 2015.
Yeah.
And it's very funny in terms of the... By the time it become the hardest items for Christmas, nobody really knows what to call it. Hoverboard is just one of the names, but it's not a standard name. Flywheel, there are all kind of strange names people call, but it's just came out of this ecosystem. Factory specializing in wheels, in control, in motors, and people just put them together, and with tens of thousands of this cross-border e-commerce, people put this up on Amazon. If you look at Amazon, they have probably about 5,000 sellers who sell hoverboard. If you look at eBay, there are about 15,000 of them. And this huge system, it ships about 15 million, somewhere estimated between 15 to 20 million hoverboard globally this year. And that creating a business of about $2 to $3 billion. And it's all emerged in 2 years. And right now there's some legal dispute in the States on the hoverboard, but it's still the same system is going to solve it all. But it is interesting is the, I think for the, I've been starting in the internet business since 95. I think back in the day, that's also this, not this very advertising driven internet today. Back then, people talked a lot about the empowerment by the internet, the empowerment by the network to starting your own business, to starting your own very niche productions. And 20 years later, the first things we see coming out of this, it's actually not emerging from Silicon Valley. It's not some startup figuring out the this hoverboards and in 2 years creating a billion-dollar industry out of it. It's actually out of China and getting into using the internet and getting into the global markets. And it just creates a very interesting phenomena in terms of the product getting so popular and it doesn't have a name. And it's also interesting because we have been tracking this for the past probably 6 months. It's interesting is the right now there are new opportunity opened up by the hoverboard. So right now on average, hoverboard is on Amazon for about $250. But right now because of this all this niche play, people starting to move into branding it. Branding their own hoverboard. And they take the same things and actually starting to put on different service, different kind of the visuals, different kind of identity, try to build up. And right now, we have generic on Amazon and eBay for $250 and the boutique brand for $500, for $800. And we kind of look at the very weird situation of generic comes before the brand. And that's the part of the opportunity is going to be very exciting for the next, for the development of the smart hardware. Because the ecosystem support not just a hoverboard. They support cell phone, smartwatch, bracelet, everything we can think of as the smart hardware. That's the same system we have there down in Shenzhen. You concentrate on what you do the best. Branded it, created user experience, and we are going to see more and more of this in 2016 and moving on.
Is this kind of entrepreneurship happening in other places in the world? I mean, you're pretty global. You get around. You know, I mean, it just seems like this is just so fervent. This is just so incredibly creative and so fast moving.
Yeah. So this is the very... It takes a very different kind of the ecosystem to support this kind of entrepreneurship. It's very interesting phenomena in terms of the just take hoverboard as example. The industry has moved so fast in the past 2 years, but it's very creative. It's creative. It's innovative. It turned into all kind of different configurations, big one, small one, the one with the Bluetooth speakers. But if you go to every one of them, you ask, like, what's your inspiration? What's your strength? Where do you get the idea from? Yeah. Why are you doing this? You actually get a very straightforward answers. We just want to make a buck.
Yeah.
And but with massive amount of people be able to do this on a shared intellectual property, it creating an ecosystem where everybody benefit. And it's kind of the, it takes different kind of thinkings and takes different kind of the collaborations to create this kind of the ecosystem. It is very unique to China because it's during its development, it's still at this developing country that's the not paying that much attention to the intellectual property, not paying that much attention to be able to benefit to suck in the entire markets.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, people share. People, and that's where the interesting part of how China is interacting with the global maker movement. Because everywhere else, this is a subculture. Everywhere else, this is the, we have a lot of people are very vocal, advocating the sharing, the open source hardware, all this.
Yeah.
And in the maker movement. But if you take the maker movement as a business, it's barely $1 billion. And this just, this Hoverboard is really a side business of the Sanzai ecosystem. And it's already a probably $3-4 billion industry. And it grows in 2 years rather than the 10, 15 years accumulations as the maker movements. So that's a lot of to learn from, to leverage in these systems in terms of what the maker, how they get things done, and to take a new look at the intellectual property business opportunity, how this would scale. So I think that's where we see the big impact of China will have in the smart hardware, because right now we are actually entering the age where technology is easy access. Technology, I mean, company like Intel is basically, unlike the old Intel, it's very restricted access to its technology. Right now, it's putting Edison up there, Galileo up there. Right now, the Curie is coming out.
Yeah.
And it's basically just say, okay, well, everybody go and build something. So technology is no longer the factors, the core competence.
Yeah.
The competence will ship into the, will ship to the service, the interactions, the experience. For me, this is actually the second time this happens. So
the second time?
My background is the, I finished high school in Taiwan in the early 90s.
Yeah.
So I went to stay, I studied computer science. And in 95, I basically dropped out of my graduate study and into the, just basically get into the industry. For those of us old enough to remember the 90s.
I'm one of those.
The story of the internet in the 90s is not about a business model. It's about technology.
Yeah.
It's about Microsoft versus Netscape. Microsoft versus Oracle.
Yeah.
Microsoft versus everybody, but in technology, not in business.
Yeah.
And that's what drives the first bubbles.
Yeah,
that's
technology race.
Yep, it's a technology race, but at the end of the day, when the bubble actually bursts, people realize it's not about technology. It's about what, now you have this tool to enable a global communication, a global access. What do you do with it? And this is, I always use the example, is the by 2000, that's this English teachers who lives in Hangzhou, hanging out on the waste lake, talking to the foreigner tourists, learn about these things called internet.
Mm-hmm.
He has only read about or heard about, but he's never used it by 2000s. And he had the ideas of say, okay, well, I want to start an internet company. And that's what that English teacher is Ma Yun. And the company is Alibaba.
Jack Ma.
It's Jack Ma. And that is actually one of the perfect examples of the same transition we are going through right now. We are when it comes to the smart objects, when it comes to the Internet of Things,
connected devices,
we still think of it as technology play. We still ask about what kind of cutting edge technology you have, but it's really shifting to what are you going to do with the technology? What are you going to do with the what are you going to build? What experience? What things you are going to bring to the mass? And I think we are. It's going to take 2-3 years to change to shift the mindset from building a smart hardware being something of the techies to building a smart hardware is opportunity, a big opportunity everybody can tap into. So that's where China will become more important in 2016.
Definitely.
Because not just the manufacturers here, but it's the very open manufacturer ecosystem, which is here. Everybody can come and tap into it.
It's the spirit and it's the speed.
Yep.
I think, which is absolutely key. David, thank you very much. We're out of time for this episode, but there's so much more that I want to talk to you about. I'm going to see if we can actually get you back for a part two to talk about more of the agri-tech and the farming, and because I know that's a big interest of yours now. And then, you know, when we get you back next time, also talk about the Maker Collider, I believe it is, with Intel, and the Shenzhen Innovation Labs that you're doing down there. So we're going to get you back for a part two. So this is now just turned into part one, very impromptu. But this is just gold. This is absolute gold, and I can't thank you enough. For our listeners, I hope you really appreciate everything that you're hearing because it is absolute gold, and it is an amazing insight into what's going on here in China from the most knowledgeable person about what's going on, David Li. David, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Hi, before we go, I have one favor to ask of you guys. I'm here with Chi Leo, our producer, and what do we want, Chi?
Hi, guys. Please write to us at team@chinastartuppulse.com.
Yeah, because we really want to get your voice on the air. We will ask our next guest the questions that you write us. And who doesn't have any questions about China and startups, Chi?
Yeah, of course we do have a lot of questions.
Yeah, so give us a ping at team@chinastartuppulse.com.